from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A UCLA Anderson forecast report published on Tuesday predicts an economic boost for California and the Bay Area as military spending increases under a Trump administration. But the shift in deportation policy for undocumented immigrants could heavily have impact on the state's agricultural sector, where an estimated half of the workers are undocumented. We take apart the report's findings in this Forum segment for not only California, but the nation. And let me tell you who is joining us. I want to welcome back to Forum Jerry Nicholsberg. He's in Los Angeles. He's professor of economics at UCLA's Anderson School of Management and co-authored the UCLA Anderson Forecast Report. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. Good to have you back with us. Also, I want to welcome David Shulman, who is also a senior economist and, Jerry Nicholsberg's professor of economics. David Shulman's a senior economist with the UCLA Anderson Forecast and co-author of the UCLA Anderson Forecast Report. Welcome, David Shulman.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And I should say that David Shulman is joining us this morning from New Mexico. Let me begin, if I may, Jerry Nicholsberg, with you. There is a lot of uncertainty, of course, about what's going to happen economically under Trump. Position shift and a lot of things just remain in the uncertain category. But what you're doing here essentially is kind of what was headlined in the Los Angeles Times. There are big risks and there are potential big rewards, as you see it.
That's correct. So what we know, there's what we know and what we are only really speculating about. And what we think we know is that there will be a boost in defense spending. That seems to be pretty much a lock on to go through Congress. That defense spending is going to build up the military, but in particular, with respect to California, it means increased demand for defense durable goods. That means a demand for software, means a demand for equipment, and these are things that are disproportionately favored for California industry. So that's one of the things that that we have some high confidence in. The second is that there's going to be a reduction in taxes, which means that Californians' disposable income will be increasing, and that's good news because Prop 55 passed, which means the Prop 30 taxes are going to continue for another 12 years, so that'll be offset with a decrease in federal taxes. So both of those are going to be favorable for California, but there are a great many unknowns about policy that we're currently reading about. There are disputes within the Republican Party, much less between Republicans and Democrats, over what policies might be enacted.
Well, the tax cuts, in fact, you're estimating up to about $500 billion. But as far as the unpredictable, and let me go to you on this, David Shulman, I mean, you're figuring in likely deportations, a big number of deportations, which certainly could affect the agricultural economy in California and could mean difficulty harvesting, higher prices for fruits and vegetables, also higher wages.
Well, first of all, we're assuming only modest changes to immigration policy in the base case. The risk is it's the policy is more aggressive. We're also assuming only modest changes to trade policy in our forecast, because when the Trump administration sees the rubber meeting the road, I think that we think they'll be more modest than their rhetoric, and if they're more aggressive, then we'll have to reevaluate the forecast. But we're not assuming a major change in immigration policy that would affect the forecast.
Of course, about half of the agricultural workers in California are undocumented.
Well, that's right.
There are really two aspects to this. One is that very aggressive deportations would disrupt American agriculture, not just California, but throughout. It's estimated that up to 80% of slaughterhouse employees, and that may be very high because these estimates are a little squirrely, are undocumented. But also, even if an aggressive policy is desired, it's actually quite hard to do because the system is now choked with a long backload of deportation cases. And, you know, it's not like the movie Born in East L.A. where Cheech Marin was picked up and just put on a bus and finds himself in Mexico. You have to go through due process. And these things are hard to do and they're expensive. So it would, even if an aggressive deportation policy were the new policy, it's going to take quite some time to get that in place.
That's Jerry Nicholsberg, again, professor of economics at UCLA's Anderson School of Management and co-author of the UCLA Anderson Forecast with David Shulman, who's a senior economist. Actually, David Shulman, you say we're going to go from maybe reckless monetary policy under the Fed to reckless fiscal policy under Donald Trump?
Yes, because, you know, we've had 7 years, 8 years of zero interest rate policy with 3 years of quantitative easing. And there's been huge financial repression in the system that was created, was likely a bubble in the bond market, and has also wreaked havoc with most pension plans. And I think that's coming to an end, and replacing that we'll have the reckless fiscal policy, mainly around the tax cuts, because the federal deficit will go from about $500 billion a year to $1 trillion a year in 2 years. As a result of mostly the tax cuts, and an economy at full employment shouldn't be running a deficit equal to 5% of GDP, which is what we will be doing if we get that level of tax cuts.
You're also, Jerry Nicholsberg, pretty much going on Trump's word that he's going to put a lot of money into infrastructure. He's talked about even some estimate even as high as $1 trillion, which would be a real stimulus to the economy, presumably. It's what the Democrats were trying to do in terms of stimulating the economy. It would mean market growth.
Well, we're assuming some money going into infrastructure, not as much as has been promised, because that has to get through Congress. And then there's a question is how is that distributed through the country? And I think as far as California is concerned, we're not confident that a lot is going to come to California in the next 2 years for a couple of reasons, one of which is infrastructure takes a lot of time to get into place. When you start building bridges and roads, and you all know this in the Bay Area with the building of the replacement Bay Bridge, it doesn't happen overnight, and you have to do the EIRs, and you have to do the engineering and let the contracts, and those things take years and years in California. So even if that infrastructure package goes through at half of what's promised, how much comes to California over the next 2 years is really a big question.
Well, also a big question, and let me go to you on this, David Shulman, is what is going to happen with housing? You're predicting probably decrease in housing activity?
No, not, we're not predicting decrease. We used to, we had a fairly substantial increase in housing activity in 2017 and 2018. We would go roughly from 1,200,000 starts nationally to about 1,400,000 or 1,450,000 starts. But the very sharp rise in interest rates, which we expect will continue, I mean, the 30-year fixed mortgage has gone from 3.5% to 4.25% in about 2 months. Mostly as a result of the election, and that will go higher. So we will only have housing increasing modestly to, say, 1,250,000. So housing is going to sort of flatten out, in our view, rather than go to the 1,400,000 units that we were previously forecasting. So we're not forecasting a drop, but the increase that we were previously forecasting.
You've come down to that increase forecast. I say you've come down from that previous increase.
We've come down from the previous forecast, but it's still going to be higher on a year-over-year basis.
And you're also predicting small but nevertheless significant GDP growth.
Well, yeah, when you put in $500 billion of tax cuts in 1 year, you're gonna juice the economy, at least temporarily. I mean, there's issues whether that could be sustained, which we don't think it can. But you are going to get an increase in GDP growth as a result of the taxes, because we're going to see a consumption boom. We're going to see increases in defense spending, and we're going to see a turnaround in business capital spending coming from the lower corporate taxes. So we will see the economy starting in the middle of 2017 being a lot better. And we suspect that's what the stock market is trying to tell us with the big rally since the election. And so we think the stock market is right in terms of direction, that the economy is going to be better. We're not sure about what the magnitude is going to be. So my guess is we're not as ebullient as the stock market, but we think the economy will be better as measured by most of the indicators. Will have higher inflation with that, but the real economy will be better.
Well, it could, in fact, also, I'm no economist by any stretch, but Jerry Nicholsberg, couldn't all the stimulation of the economy and federal tax cuts unleash larger deficits? One would think inevitably.
Well, that's right.
we have in our forecast $1 trillion deficits. So before we all put our party hats on about higher GDP, and David's article was entitled Reckless Fiscal Policy, you can boost GDP in this way, but it has real dangers. You need a correction to it because you're boosting GDP in a basically full employment economy, and that's true about California and the U.S. as a whole.
And
can I make a comment?
Yeah, David Shulman, go ahead.
Yeah, for the past 5 years, we had liberal economists like Larry Summers and Paul Krugman pleading for more fiscal stimulus. Well, we're going to get more fiscal stimulus. It's a different form from what they had suggested. They would be more on the spending side than on the tax side. But we're going to get a significant fiscal stimulus, and this is what economists, you know, would be viewed more economists on the left as opposed to, say, economists on the right. They've been begging for this for 5 years, so we're going to get it. And their argument was the economy would get better. And even if you read Paul Krugman's column, he says the world, the economy is probably going to be better near term. In what he's been writing in his New York Times columns and on his blog.
We're talking about a UCLA Anderson forecast report, which was published on Tuesday, predicting an economic boost for California and the Bay Area's military spending increases under a Trump administration. But the shift in deportation policy for undocumented immigrants could heavily have impact on the state's agricultural sector, where an estimated half of the workers are undocumented. We want to hear from you on this, and I know many of you have questions and comments you'd like to bring to the fore, so feel free to do that now. Our toll-free number is available to you, and it's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, so feel free to join us now. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. There are, of course, a number of other ways you can communicate with us and also bring your questions and comments on board here. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, or go to our Facebook page. Many ways that you indeed can become part of the program. Jerry Nicholsberg with us, professor of economics, co-author of the UCLA Anderson Forecast Report. He's with UCLA's Anderson School of Management. And David Shulman, who is senior economist with the UCLA Anderson Forecast, and again, co-author of the report. And let me just, before we go to our callers and our emailers and those who want to communicate questions or comments, just go back to you, Jerry Nicholsberg, on something that plays an important part in this, in the bigger picture, as far as your report. And I'm talking, of course, about not only potential with respect to trade wars. I mean, you even have a 10% chance of a trade war with China or Mexico. I don't know how you come to that figure. You might at least gloss that for us. But also, a lot depends on trade deals with China. A lot depends on relations with China. We just had our president-elect call was called by the president of Taiwan. So there's a lot of shifting sands there, to be sure. But what did you come up with?
Okay, so first of all, the 10% number was from my colleague, and you know, he was just trying to kind of rough out what he thought might be the likelihood. I think this is a big unknown as to what's going to happen here. In our forecast, we assume that we do not have a trade war with China, and by that, I mean we don't have the talked about 45% tariffs and the back and forth restrictions on trade. What's going to happen here? I think this is a big unknown. There has been a promise by the president-elect to negotiate a new international trade agreement with China. And the Chinese will certainly have a lot to say about that, and we don't know how that's going to evolve. If it were to come to pass that we had increased trade with China, with more exports from the U.S., that would certainly benefit California. But if we end up with 45% tariffs, that's going to be really bad for trade. It's going to be bad for exports from California. It'll hit the Port of Oakland as well as the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, both in imports and exports. And, of course, the Port of Oakland is a conduit for exports of agricultural produce from California and from other parts of the U.S. to China. So this is a big unknown. It's a risk. It's something that we all need to keep our eyes on because it could turn around this forecast that has California growing over the next 2 years into something much less pleasant.
I believe your report states the figure here, about 40% of all goods go through the state ports. I'm going to go to our callers and emailers, but let me just first go back to you, David Shulman. And can we talk just for a moment about jobs? I mean, we're almost at full employment now. What are you forecasting?
Well, we think, we were surprised that we had a 4.6% unemployment release in November. We think that may be an overshoot, but we think we'll be at sustained, say, 4.5% unemployment for the next 2 years. That's going to be viewed as roughly full employment, and then we think labor force participation rate will go up, the employment to population rate will go up, and we'll also see real wage gains. We think nominal wages will probably go up around 4%, better than the less than 3% we've been having, and so it'll be real wage gains. So we think that's a reasonably good outlook on the labor market. I think the labor market is going to do reasonably well over the next 2 years. Now, we've been forecasting that for a while. It's just moved up just a little bit because we've been forecasting an improved labor market for a while.
That's encouraging to hear, though, and I want to go hear from our listeners next. Let me go to East Hampton, New York, and welcome a caller. Bob, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for the show, as always.
Thank you.
Question I want to ask is sort of an alarmed liberal like a lot of us can be. I don't want to jump off the boat, but I am concerned with having someone with reckless and certainly not middle class, not kind of consistent, considerate growth, without being an alarmist, because that's, I know I am. What are the real holes, potholes, issues, errors that you do see without, as being real concerns to something someone with a reckless fiscal policy or his stated fiscal policy could have on everyone, from the job force to everything, from the prices to the works?
Jerry Nicholsberg.
So, in terms of fiscal policy, so I just want to speak about the economics, because there's, a whole host of other issues that people are talking about. But in terms of fiscal policy, if you stimulate an economy that is at or close to full employment, the risk there is that you overheat the economy and you create imbalances. So the way in which that's paid for, and those big deficits are paid for, are through economic contraction, and that's what we call a recession. Now, we're not calling for a recession, but what we're saying is that these policies have the potential of increasing the probability of a recession. And the second thing that I'd like to add to this is that the issue of employment, which was really an issue in the campaign, is one of an economy in transformation, that the manufacturing jobs that disappeared, particularly in the upper Midwest, are manufacturing jobs that are not coming back because automation is taking over those jobs. So the employment question is really one of workforce training and easing the transformation to the new 21st century economy.
And let me thank Bob for his call. And there are some concerns being raised by callers. Here's more from Doug on that score. Doug, welcome. You're on the air.
It's much easier for me to imagine a total of 4% economic growth overall than a 4% growth in wages, because what we heard today is that President-elect's appointment to labor secretary is somebody who has a very, very radical view about crushing labor organizing and worker power in the service sector. The service sector is a part of the economy that's growing, part of the employment market that's growing most quickly. And this is somebody who wants to keep service workers as low-wage workers with very little to no benefits. I see no way that we get to 4% wage growth under this sort of policy.
Yeah, Doug, I thank you for that call. And I want to dovetail it with a comment from a listener named Ben, and we'll go to you on this, David Shulman. Ben writes, I would like to hear more about the potential loss of federal dollars and programs and how that will impact lower-income businesses and neighborhoods. Daniel writes, it's not the economy that's struggling in California. It's the abused and underpaid wage earners. Pay them more, give them some disposable income. That will stimulate the economy and help the masses. What does boost the economy mean anyways? Pad the pockets of CEOs. So again, we're seeing this kind of concern about low wages along with loss of
federal dollars. To me, is when you're at very, very at full employment or very, very close to full employment, employers are running out of people to hire. And the only way they're going to get the people is they're going to have to bid more to get higher wages. And wages go up not only administratively or through union contracts. Wages also go up through the old rules of supply and demand. And when we had 10-11% unemployment at the start of, at the recession, is there was a huge glut of labor. People were leaving, and it was very obvious that wages weren't going to go up in that kind of environment. We're moving into an environment we haven't seen in a while, and the old rules of supply and demand, you might disagree with that, but the old rule is going to work because, like as of right now, retailers are struggling to find people to work this holiday season, and pay is being bid up. So we're in an environment where the economy is actually going to work for the low end wage earner.
Could you respond, David Shulman, to that first comment I read? Because it not only has to do with wages, it has to do with lower income businesses and neighborhoods, potential loss of federal dollars and programs.
Well, the thing is you may have that. We've modeled in some Medicaid cuts because we think Republicans like to cut Medicaid. So we've modeled in some Medicaid cuts, but a lot of the cuts they've been talking about haven't really been specified. And I think we're going to have to wait and see as to what extent the impact of cuts, if any. But you also have to remember is that during the campaign, unlike other Republican candidates, Donald Trump stood very firmly against dealing with correcting some very long-term fiscal issues associated with Social Security and Medicare, and he took those off the table.
Let me bring another caller in here. Let's go next to Livermore and welcome Victor. Victor, you're on the air.
Hi. I guess my question is, I'm very curious about what the actual evidence is for the idea that, quote-unquote, tax cuts stimulate the economy. I just want to know what the actual data-driven evidence for this so often heard talking point actually is.
It's a good question, and Jerry Nicholsberg, I'll go to you on this. We've been hearing from Republicans consistently that tax cuts mean job creation. Not only job creation, but stimulation of the economy. Evidence.
Well, so the evidence is very mixed. And what we've done in our forecast is something that's much more modest than what the rhetoric has been about. So in our forecast, what we've done is translate those tax cuts into a demand for consumer goods. That's a kind of one-time shot. We have that boosting the economy just over a one-year period and then returning to where we were before. But in addition, we have the savings rate go up, and I think this addresses the caller's question. The savings rate goes up because much of the tax cuts are going to higher-income individuals whose propensity to consume is much lower. And so you get a very modest boost in economic activity stimulated by higher disposable income, but it's only, fairly temporary. So that's really kind of in real contrast.
Yeah, David.
Jerry, it's only temporary because we're at full employment. But if you go back and look at the history, it's only temporary because we're at full employment, so you can't get a bang for the buck that you do in the middle, if you were in the middle of a recession. But if you go back and look at the Kennedy tax cuts in the 1960s, you look at the Reagan tax cuts in the early 80s, and even if you look at the Bush tax cuts in the early 2000s, there was real direct evidence that the economy was stimulated.
And you could talk to most
liberal economists on the Keynesian side. They would say is if you cut taxes, you can stimulate the economy. The issue is what the rhetoric is that if you cut taxes, you could get a big supply side effect. And there the evidence is mixed.
Yeah, Jerry, you wanted in here, Jerry Nicholsberg, right?
Yeah. I agree with David. I mean, the issue here is we're cutting taxes in the near full employment economy, and the fiscal policy, and this is what David described as reckless fiscal policy, the fiscal policy recommendation of economists as a way of stimulating the economy has to do with stimulating an economy in recession. You want exactly the opposite when you get to full employment. And so you want to balance that out, stimulative fiscal policy in a recession, less so when you're at or near full employment.
Let me bring another caller on who's, I think, talking about this directly. Terry, go ahead.
Hi, yeah, I just want to comment that, you know, the governor of Kansas tried this with huge tax cuts and incentives for businesses to come to the state, and now the state is nearly bankrupt. The school system is suffering. The citizens are losing services. It's a failed policy, and I think we can see it there in that state. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Either of the co-authors of the Anderson forecast want to respond to that?
She said the state of Kansas, did she say?
She did, yeah.
Yeah, well, the thing is in a state, Kansas totally overdid it and overpromised and completely under-delivered on that. And there's very real serious issues in Kansas. The thing is that there's a difference between the state of Kansas and the federal government is the federal government can print money, and there's no printing press in Topeka, Kansas to bail out Governor Brownback.
All right, I want to get one more caller on before we have to end the segment. Kumar, you're on. Good morning.
Hey, so it's very nice to hear about the tax cuts everywhere, but there is no reciprocative indication of any spending cut. Only the debt will keep increasing, and how will that affect in the long term for the country in that case?
Yeah, it does. I think Jared Neckelsberg, that's a point well worth considering. Donald Trump, again, he's unpredictable in so many ways, but he's been talking about a lot of spending for infrastructure, defense, and so forth that doesn't necessarily equal out. I mean,
that's why we said reckless.
Yeah, reckless is the key word here, I guess.
So you know, we began this segment by talking about what we don't know. And there have been a lot of policies thrown around. And one of the reasons why we don't know, and this is exactly the caller's comment, is because Congress has to look at these big deficits and decide whether or not they want to go with those deficits. Or are they going to have spending cuts elsewhere, or are they going to nix some of these programs?
Well, we will continue to hold our breath on that one. Thank you both, though. Again, Jerry Neckelsberg and David Shulman, co-authors of the UCLA Anderson Forecast. Jerry Neckelsberg joined us from UCLA, and David Shulman joined us from New Mexico. And hope you will join us for another hour of Forum. Coming up ahead, we're going to talk with Yah Jesse, the author of a much-praised new novel, a debut novel called Homegoing, which takes place in Africa and here in the United States. She is of Ghana birth and actually grew up in Alabama and now lives in Berkeley. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I thank you for being with us for this opening hour. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.